Welcome to this edition of the Million Dollar Mastermind Podcast. This is where we pick the brains of high achievers from all walks of life and get their hard-earned, real-world insights on winning. I'm your host, Larry Wydell. Now, are you dealing with the entrepreneur? I guess it's a forest. You can't see the forest for the trees type thing when you're in the middle of the battle. A lot of the times, the to-do list accelerates, especially if it's a well-run company, it grows. And then the problem with when it grows is things that you outgrow the systems and the workload that your existing situation can handle. And then it creates all kind of confusions where people are doing two or three different things. Other options are coming up. You have to sort through them. You got to handle today's, probably got to meet today's deadlines. And it can quickly get overwhelming in well-run companies. And so what you're telling me is that the value that you bring to the table is helping them see like the forest for the trees type thing.
Yeah. And to be honest, that's sort of what I've focused on and now being more of what I consider a business owner and an investor rather than a consultant. But to be honest, I haven't done government consulting for like 5 or 6 years now, but even though I own the company, but what I felt like I had to learn to get out of, talked about that time when realized we were losing money and realized we had to run the business in a different way, was I had to go from being a consultant operator, like, so think about it from general business, not just mine. Like I had to go from really being the guy who did the work. I would call that being an operator. You're kind of like in the middle doing everything and you're the hub and everybody else is a spoke coming to you. I had to evolve from that to becoming really a business owner. And to me, that was really about building a team that could handle. So it wasn't hub and spoke anymore. There was a team that was managing the functions of the business across that then was reporting to me as a leader, as a CEO, right? So that to me was going from operator to owner. And then I think the ultimate, like the transition I'm going through now is going from where you've built a team to really crafting that team over time and building them into leaders where they have teams. And you become what I consider the investor, where really the company is mostly self-managing. And you're now looking across your company, other options, other investments, and figuring out where to allocate your capital, where the market's going. That to me is sort of the journey I've gone through, is like being that person in the thick of it, to being the person building the team to manage the business, to now being the investor who's looking across multiple options. And quite frankly, helping other people do what I did to build their businesses.
Well, what's been the biggest help to you personally in going through that transition and other transitions you've had to go through?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the number one thing that, so when I was losing money, this is probably mid-2010s, somewhere around there, I was not sleeping well.
We all know that, Alan.
Yes, exactly. As the debt's racking up on the line.
Yeah, we all know that phase, unfortunately.
Yes. 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 And so I spent a lot of time searching around. There was no lesson in business school about personal guarantees on credit lines, right? They didn't teach you that because you were going to be a Disney with their massive bond portfolio or whatever. So I think for me, I started searching around for somebody to help me.
Yeah.
And I found a guy named Craig Crabtree talking on YouTube about, he talks a lot about finance, but he talks a lot about a concept called labor efficiency and how labor is a lever that creates productivity in companies. Taught you a whole system about it. Anyway, it's not important what the system was, but I was like, it was like a ray of sunshine coming into my dark room where I wasn't sleeping. I was like, oh, this guy's telling the truth. Like, this is amazing. And ended up hiring him. And Greg's been a mentor of mine for 10 years, but it really, that was the entree for me into business education, peer groups, and mentoring. So I joined the Entrepreneurs Organization. Eventually, when we got larger, I joined Young Presidents Organization, YPO. And
what is the president's, what is that one?
YPO, Young Presidents Organization.
Okay.
It's business owner group, a little bit bigger qualification to get into than entrepreneurs organization. And so those were really peer groups where I met other business owners. I didn't really know other business owners at that point and did a lot of education. I've done masterminds, I've done courses, I read a lot. And so it really took that peer group being with other business owners to realize, oh yeah, I'm a business owner now. So, and like Greg has this great line that like, once you get to gross margin, all businesses taste like chicken. And so, yeah, you can have all this different stuff in COGS and you have materials or not, or labor high or low. But by the time you get down there, everything's the same. And so I could learn from people who ran a manufacturing companies or other things. So it was really that peer mentoring and the knowledge I got from learning days at EO and going to, you know, I'm doing this entrepreneurial master's program that's part of EO. That's where I really learned the concepts that helped me turn around the business. And frankly, we've grown it quite large now and we're on a real tear, and it's all because of that learning.
What were some of the biggest light bulbs that went on for you from that process or in that environment that you can remember, other than you went from doing to getting the job done and running the company that does the job rather than doing the job yourself? You know, that's the entrepreneur myth that I've got a company, but really I'm the only guy working there.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. You got a job.
Yeah.
You just happen to pay yourself.
Right. So other than that, where you got the picture of, which is important, you got to get the picture in your mind of what you've got to be now. But what are some other things that kind of light bulbs that came to you from that, that kind of origamied out from that?
Yeah, I mean, there are three main things that I think are crucial for me. The first was what I mentioned with Greg, which is all business is about applying labor to problems to create productivity for customers, right? So labor is what it's all about. The cost you pay for it, the leverage you get out of it, all that. So, and then kind of related to that, I measure that very closely, and it's a benchmark we use throughout all the companies that I'm involved with now. But related to that is the concept of that there's a guy, Brent Beeshore, is a great, he has a kind of permanent hold private equity company. And he said, all small businesses stay small for a reason. And my corollary to that was, and it's because of the owner. And it's because the owner won't make the decisions they have to make. And those decisions almost always involve poor performance of team members. Or not just poor performance, the inability of team members, particularly leaders, to grow as quickly as the company grows. So I think a fundamental insight was, it's the people who got you here won't get you there.
Right.
And every time the company doubles or triples, my estimate now is 50 to 75% of the leadership team needs to turn over. And that was a harsh reality that I did not want to deal with for a long time. And I said, my company didn't grow for several years because I had the wrong people.
What was the breaking point where you absolutely had to face up to that issue?
Yeah, I mean, it was like facing the loss of clients and not seeing growth for a couple of years. So like, I've had that happen two or three times throughout my career. And you can talk to people about, you know, I built a leadership team and you go day to day making decisions and you can kind of make excuses for why things aren't happening. You can understand the reason in the moment why XYZ isn't growing or this client isn't happier than they should be. And you can kind of go along with those excuses. You're kind of a part of the decisions that are made.
Yeah.
So sometimes you feel like it's partly your fault, which I'm sure it is. But at a certain point, you've got to say, all right, I have repeated patterns. Like I always just say, whatever department all the problems are coming from, that's the leader you got to replace, right? I mean, it's clear. Right?
Yeah.
If it just keeps happening,
right?
That's the problem, right? Doesn't really matter what else is going on. And I think the issue is, you know, you're a $5 million company, say, and you want to get to 10 and you're not growing. Well, you don't know how to grow. And nobody else on the team knows how to grow to 10 because you've never done it. And it's not anyone's fault, but you're like the one person who isn't going to go, right? Unless you sell the company.
Yeah.
So It's sort of like, all right, the person who's going to fire the people and hire the new people, I guess that's going to have to be me because no one else is going to do it.
Yeah.
So I do think that it's a hard thing. It's a hard lesson to learn. And I fundamentally believe that one of the reasons most companies don't grow is because of this issue, that business owners don't want to clean up the leadership issues. I mean, there could be some other stuff too. I mean,
right.
Obviously, if you're embezzling money or spending all your money on Ferraris, you're not going to grow either. But mostly, I think it's they prize loyalty over the growth of the company. And that's, if you want to do that, that's fine. No shade on anyone's decision. It's just companies can grow a lot faster than people.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
For those of you who are sick and tired of fooling around and are dead serious about wanting to move up fast, I've got something especially for you. I've combined the best insights from over 40 years in business and making $70 million in income and compressed them into a free webinar. That's right, it's a free resource. If you want to find out exactly what the concepts are that I use in coaching Million Dollar Earners, register now at WeidellOnWinning.com. You'll discover the 5-part framework used by so many to reach their financial, personal, and professional goals. You can find that link in this episode's show notes. And those three things, that I just think there's more there. I don't want to run through those because those are really powerful. And that's kind of a lifetime of observation, plus going through those experiences yourself. But those three, I'd like to pull them, if you'd pull them out again and roll through them, but I think it would be help a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, so first was the first thing you need to understand in business is to measure the efficiency of the labor you're employing on whatever task you're employing it on. That isn't about, the second issue is a little more about your leadership team and that kind of thing. But the first is really like, am I employing the right mix of labor to make money off of what I'm doing? And so Greg Crabtree has a simple calculation called his labor efficiency ratio. And so you should be making $2 in revenue. I mean, Greg usually takes out subcontractors and materials from that, but either way, it depends a little bit on the business. But basically, you should be making $2 in revenue for every dollar in labor you pay. And that's pretty universal across businesses. Again, some adjustment for COGS. If you're a construction company and you do $18 million in pass-throughs and you're a $20 million company, you're not going to have a 2 LER. But once you take out that pass-through, that's what you should have the 2 on. And it's almost fundamental across all businesses. And so I urge all business owners to start there. Like, is the labor you're employing getting you the revenue you require to run a profitable, decent business? And so that's like the first thing.
You look at you would compare that by doing the gross labor expense versus gross revenue. Is that right?
Right. With the exceptions of like, if you have a lot of, you can take out pass-through, like subcontractors that you're not managing, and some materials. But yeah, like he calls it gross margin. Anyway, it gets a little complicated with what figure you're using, but basically take revenue minus subcontractors and direct materials. And you should be getting $2 of that revenue for every dollar of labor you pay, gross labor.
Regardless of what business you're in.
Regardless of what business you're
in.
And almost all of them go in a narrow range around that too. I'm sure like Google and Facebook are different. But if you're not getting that, you don't have a good business and you should go get another business.
Yeah.
That was the first realization I had. And you can really measure and hire around that metric. And it's kept me in good stead for 10 years now. The second part was really focusing on the leadership team you have is what will determine whether you grow or not. And every time that revenue figure grows 2 to 3 times, you're going to have to do surgery on that leadership team. It's not going to stay the same. You're not going to have people from 1 million go to 50. Or you could have one person, right? But you're not going to have the whole team go with you the whole way. And so I like that is an important caveat. There are one or two people who probably can take that journey with you, exceptional people.
And to shed some light on the point why that happens. And so you should make up your mind to try and fight it too much is the fact that usually that's a company that has done well. They've got increased and people are feeling good. They're not feeling like, crap, well, I've got to get two or three times better. All the mid-level managers are feeling pretty good about things. They're expecting some pay raises and some bonuses and expecting some good rewards because things have grown and they've had a role in that, but they haven't been the driver. The difference is who's the driver of this thing? And if you need people with more drive, as you grow your company, you can be the driver, but you need more. It's a lot easier if you've got some more drivers involved. But I find that the higher level of the employee has to do with their initiative and their energy they bring to what they're doing. Are they thinking? And that stems from what they want to do. And so when you get a batch of people, they've been doing well, they're not really as a group probably thinking about, I got to get two or three times better like the entrepreneur. Because I know when I ran the sales force, every October I started evaluating, has the year gone the way I wanted? What's it going to be next year? And the one thing I would always say to myself, I don't want to be the reason we don't grow next year. I can take just about anything, but I don't want fingers pointed back to me. You were thinking too small. You didn't make these changes. Because the one thing an entrepreneur should do is take yourself out of the equation of being the problem. Just make sure you're not the problem, you know, on these things.
Right, exactly. And I don't think I hit the third thing, actually. So the third thing I think I really learned that I think is fundamental is your business is an asset and you have to treat it as an asset, right? So I think that owners turn it into their life. They turn it into their family. They turn it into all sorts of whatever. It's always a reflection of the owner, right? Yeah. But I think it's the most healthy when you get into that investment mindset where you're the investor looking at it as an asset. That helps you look at it more objectively. I always try to say, like, you should think about an acquirer. What do they look at your company as, right?
Right, exactly.
Because that really helps you make smarter decisions. And look, the market is the market. There are innovations and there are disruptive, innovative firms that do totally different things. And I don't deny that and think that's great. And you should try to do that stuff. But the reality is you're not going to transform a business into something else. It's always going to be an asset.
Right.
And you're much better off understanding it that way. And then always trading off, like, is this asset the right asset that I want to own? Is it, can I improve it? Can I do this? And so I just think that helps you have a third party perspective from the market, that you don't get too wrapped up in the sort of team and family inside the company as well.
It's almost like if you had the balls, it's almost like you ought to try and sell your company periodically.
Of course. Yeah, you should, really.
Just to hear what people would ask, what's important to them, and get the feedback. You know, it's just you get an honest evaluation. Those are the people who'll give you an honest evaluation of what you've got.
That's right.
And where you're headed.
Hopefully you don't pay the lawyers, but yes, I agree that, to be honest, I think one sort of a version of that is you should probably go talk to brokers and investment bankers in your space periodically. Hey, I do that all the time. What are you seeing? Like, what does this company look like compared to others? And what are the key factors? And keep that market discipline, definitely.
Where you work with the government, there is a big danger. You mentioned a couple of times we went through this. It's like revenue started drying up and we need to restock the pantry with clients. There's a real danger of, it seems to me, you know, from the outside, that there'd be a real danger of being too big of a government contractor, because it seems like there's, the more clients you have, some stability, but you can get to where, like, you work with Walmart and Walmart owns you, or General Motors owns you. And pretty soon you're back to being an employee again. You're not the raging entrepreneur. And so what have you found out about government contracts and how people should approach that? Or which would be the same to if there's any big company providing products?
I think I've heard that the customer concentration idea in there. I mean, to me, working for the government is like my clients are pharma, right? Or my clients are all the auto companies.
Right.
I mean, government's really a different agency by agency. It's a very different beast. But to your point, it does have cycles. And when we were losing money, it was during the sequestration time after the Obama-Boehner budget deal. And the government budgets were flat to down, and the government was competing a lot of work at low cost, technically acceptable. And it wasn't a great time.
Yeah.
And to win work, you had to really cut your rates down, and we weren't willing to do that, and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I mean, my business has cycles like any other business, right? But I'm invested in several other businesses now, and they're on the economic cycle with the economy, and I'm not. So it's also nice to have to be on a different cycle. So your stock portfolio can go up or down, and your business is going in a different direction, right?
Yeah.
It's nice.
Thanks for listening to the Million Dollar Mastermind. If you felt there were any valuable takeaways from this episode, please take a minute and leave us a 5-star review. Your feedback is important and really helps us get the word out to a wider audience. Remember, we have a valuable webinar that is absolutely free. Register for it right now at whitealumwinning.com. Thanks for listening.